Hello and welcome to I Am the Eggpod with me, Chris Shaw. The Eggpods take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. In this emergency Eggpod, I'm speaking to the manager of Omega Auctions, Dan Muscatelli Hampson. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Chris.
You've been in the news recently.
We certainly have, yeah.
We've got a new tape, or three new cassette tapes on the way, and these are up for auction.
Yeah, well, three new old cassette tapes. So they were made by Ringo Starr himself during the 1966 tour. So missing out Germany, it seems, and going straight to Japan, Philippines, and then India. So they're coming up in our auction on the 26th of this month. And there's some very, very interesting content on there.
Yes. None of this has been heard before. Is that right?
Yeah, well, none of it's been heard in public. I mean, you know, obviously tracing the history of them is always difficult to do. But until they've come to us, to the best of my knowledge, they've not been heard before. It really is a time capsule.
On a Saturday, it is our fourth day in Japan. It is 3:30 in the morning, beginning of fourth day, so I am going to sleep now. So it is over and good night. Good night to you all on land, sea and foam. Good night.
Just the labels on them are pretty exciting, because there's two Philips C90s and one C60 with handwritten labels India, Maharishi and Manila.
Yeah.
We've had a few snippets online. You've put a few clips. Yeah. So maybe start with those, because people can actually hear those. But you've heard all of these, is that right?
Yeah, I've listened through all the way, and it's I obviously sort of sharing as much as we can share is it's a difficult one to try and find the balance. That, you know, as much as I would love to sort of release these to the world, unfortunately, as an auction house, we've got to protect the sort of value of what's there. So we can only really share a very small sample. So I wanted to kind of get an essence of the sort of feeling of the cassettes. Yeah, the snippet on YouTube that I put on there. So we've got a little bit of Ringo's kind of opening. That's actually one of the sort of very first bits of the cassettes, is where he's sort of getting to Japan, and it's him sort of saying, here's my, you know, we're here in Japan on the fourth day and now I'm going to bed. And it's very much in a Ringo style-y.
Because, yeah, he says it's Saturday and it's the fourth day in Japan. But didn't mention it's 3:30 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
And this is on Saturday, the 2nd of July, that means, 1966. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's possibly, is that the night before the first Budokan concert?
No, they flew over to Japan on the 27th of June. This is following the Hamburg concert. But they had to land in Anchorage because of bad weather conditions. So they had a 9-hour stop unscheduled in Anchorage on the 28th of June.
Yeah.
So that they didn't actually get there till 30th of June, where they got to Tokyo's Haneda Airport. That was at 3:40 a.m. So it had been a long old day. And in the evening, they played the Budokan on the 30th of June, and they did the second show on the 1st of July. So this is the Saturday after that. This is their fourth day.
Yeah. I see. Yeah, it's funny because I guess it's just the way that he recorded them, but they do jump around a little bit. So it's trying to sort of place them, and often it's just listening through and listening to what they're talking about. But yeah, that's so. Yeah, you've got Ringo there doing the kind of introduction. That Tokyo part of the cassettes is really, I think, some of the kind of juiciest content is in those that Tokyo period. And it's also, I mean, not to jump too far ahead, but obviously, I'm sure most of the listeners will know about how the kind of arc of the tour and how it sort of ended, or at least rather dipped in the Philippines and then maybe picked up in India. But I mean, it certainly sounds to me like he's in a pretty lighthearted mood in Tokyo. You know, it's Ringo, but he's very jaunty. And you get that again in that introduction. And it also sounds like a guy who's got a new tape recorder and he's just really enjoying, you know, talking to himself on it. It's brilliant.
Well, you forget the cassette itself was only really developed in 1962. It's only 4 years old. They're one of the first people ever to have them. They're always so ahead of the technology.
Well, it's funny you say that as well, because I was listening through them again, and part of the Japan section is, a good part of it is people coming into the hotel suites and sort of bringing stuff and bits and bobs. And you can hear, I think it was the Nikon people, the camera people, you can hear them bringing things in, and they're sort of showing things around, and I think they sort of gifted them cameras, and they're all looking, and they're quite they're impressed by the technology that's sort of being shown to them, and they're they're having a look, and there's a great bit where I think it's Brian Epstein says, somebody says, have you seen this new case? And he says, yes, I have one, but I'll have another one, thank you. they're sort of gratefully accepting these free gifts, as indeed you would, why not?
Yeah. Well, they were always into that. There's footage in the Maisels Brothers movie where they're fascinated by their camera equipment and how this new sort of setup of having a separate mic and a separate camera that are linked up through a watch. And also in Get Back as well, you can see Ringo with a video with a microphone, a handheld one. You know, that's way ahead of the curve. So they were getting all the best stuff years before everybody else.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. Yeah, absolutely.
I think you mentioned you said about Brian saying, you know, they've got money to spend.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think it's well known, isn't it, that they were sort of stuck in the hotel room for pretty much the duration of the trip, pretty much the duration of the whole trip, really. I mean, Manila as well and in India and in Germany. I mean, they're pretty much static, aren't they, outside of the concert. So people are coming to them and they're obviously interested in what people are bringing and they're buying. And you've got Brian as well talking with somebody right at the very start about, sort of tips and tricks for declaring these things that they are buying at lower values so they can get them back to the UK without paying stratospheric import charges, which, you know, it's one of those moments that it kind of spans the decades, because obviously post-Brexit, everybody is now getting stiff on our side and the EU for these huge import charges. So it's funny just that kind of like parallel between then and now.
Yes, yeah. Because I think you said, you can hear him saying, we've got $50,000 to spend on you.
Yeah, yeah. And somebody says, really? Why? And he says, oh, I don't know. That's just what they said. So I don't know. I've no idea who would authorise that or how or where that came from, if not him. But that was the figure that was quoted. So, and they're obviously in a spending mood. And I mean, I haven't done the conversion, but I mean, that's a lot of money now. it would have been even more then. But there's the photographs, of course, of them in the hotel room, surrounded by antiques, and they're all wearing the lovely kimonos. And were spending.
There's a great, you can find out some of the stuff that John bought, which I find quite amusing. He bought a parasol printed with images of flowers and birds, dark brown wooden slat baskets, each of which has a clear resin base, and that's depicting butterflies and flowers. A hand-painted wooden tray, which depicts bamboo. And he bought a black box with a sliding lid and bamboo and mother-of-pearl inlays. But he also bought quite a few boxes. And I've got a niggling feeling that these were to stash illicit substances, because they're all a similar size. And they were just about to go to Manila, where they were particularly concerned about their luggage.
Luggage in inverted commas, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that sounds perfectly plausible to me, and relatively astute, I would say, if he's buying them for a purpose rather than just spending wildly.
Yeah, it's a good thing actually, because on everything, on records and things, we never do very long records, like 11 minutes. You always leave them wanting to hear it again. Like Ian Rigby finishes, it makes you think you've missed it. Mm. Well, I was just thinking the other night that was good. Good to do that.
It
is that. Better, and I think it might be
good
for the shows too.
So what else have we got on here?
So we've got, you know, if we look again at the clip that people can hear on YouTube. So we go from that Ringo introduction to Paul. They're in Japan in the hotel room. I think it's either sort of pre or post dinner, and they're all sat around talking. And this is one of the sort of major bits of the cassette whereby they're having a conversation that you can kind of follow along between all of them. And it's Paul, and he just kind of goes on this sort of monologue about the set list and about the length of tracks. And the pull-out quote that I got is him just saying, you know, leave them wanting more, essentially, as his songwriting philosophy. And I just think that is to have that on tape, them discussing it at the period. You know, he says, Eleanor Rigby, it's, you know, before you even sort of know it, it's over.
Yes.
And that's great. And when I heard that, it's a proper jaw-dropping moment. It really is. That they're still thinking. I mean, they were criticised, weren't they, in Japan for the quality of some of the performances up and down. So they're clearly thinking about it. And I wonder if it was a sort of a reaction to that. And actually, as I was listening again, you can hear later in that same scene, I think it's Paul. This voice is not so clear. So it's either Paul or John. It says to Brian, what did you think of that concert? Was it any good? You know, it is really quite a kind of a, you wouldn't have imagined it at that period in 66, they're still looking for validation and approval on their performances by Brian. Then, you know, you would have thought they'd kind of they knew what they were about and what they were doing, but I guess maybe they'd been out of the game in the performance sense for so long that they were feeling those nerves. But to hear that again, yeah, that was an amazing one.
Well, in their set list, they did a much, much shorter version of Rock and Roll Music, so it could have been sort of referring to that, because they basically cut it in half, really, just to do as an introduction to the song. But I think, obviously, the reason the crowd's so quiet, because the security in Japan. Yeah, there's a lovely quote from Tony Barrow. He says, "George's version of what the security people got up to in the Budokan was blissfully naive, to say the least. These guys were hoping to spot potential snipers in the audience, and if they had done so, the cameras could have been exchanged for firearms in a split second. At the same time, Paul told the anthology how efficiently the guards along our two-mile route from the Tokyo Hilton to the Budokan collected up the fans and grouped them neatly at street corners and on bridges, rather than letting them wander around haphazardly. The truth is that the authorities feared the studios might have placed terrorist gunmen across the route, and by herding the fans into well-contained little groups, they were clearing their own field of fire and reducing the risk of stray bullets hitting fans." So I think the fact that the crowds are so quiet, there's a definite, you know, feeling of control over them. So yeah, the Beatles are hearing themselves for the first time, really, since the 50s, early 60s. Yeah. So it must have been a shock, because they sound so exhausted.
Definitely. I think that, yeah, and it's that kind of that tension, whether they felt that or not, is an interesting one to think about. There's another scene from the tapes where somebody's talking around the band who were not paying much attention at all about the sort of need to leave on the minute. They must leave the hotel at this time. And the band are sort of brushing it off, and I think that's another famous takeaway, wasn't it, from that? I suppose it's definitely the Japan leg, that they really weren't so fussed about the timekeeping, whereas everyone around them was absolutely fraught trying to get them around these. It was a military, well, it literally was a military operation, really, wasn't it?
Yes.
The level of police was incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah. You suggested that might be Alf Bicknell?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't know his voice, but I mean, that strikes me as reasonable, him or
Tony Barrow, maybe.
Could have been, yeah. It's definitely possible. They had a lot of people around them, didn't they, then?
I listen for your footsteps coming up the drive. Listen for your footsteps. Oh, I'm sorry, I went into the wrong key there. Start again.
And then, again, from the YouTube teaser, then we go to the sort of tail end of the cassettes, but really it's, again, like I said, in sort of the chronology element, it's only the way that I've looked at it to say that it's the tail end. I don't actually know when these were situated, but it's Ringo at the piano just sort of bashing it out on his own, and it's just brilliant, really. I've really kind of warmed towards Ringo hearing him play like that. He's just sort of, he's smashing the piano as hard as he can and working out Don't Pass Me By. And on the YouTube clip, he sort of stops and he's, again, he's just talking to himself. And he says, oh, sorry, in the wrong key there. And he starts again.
Yeah.
But as they go along, he figures it out. And you really hear the kind of the flowering of that song, really.
Yes, because he's been sort of messing around with that for years. I think there's audio in 1965 on the Brian Matthews show. He does a little bit of it, and the original lyrics are, "Don't pass me by, don't make me blue, I got the ice cream for you." And so he's still tentatively working on it.
But need some work there.
You mentioned there's two other songs that you can hear as well.
Yeah, he vamps with Don't Pass Me By, and he's obviously not got the full lyrics there, and then little cut, and then sort of a more rock and roll styly, I Bought a Picasso, which I think was an unreleased sort of Ringo solo. Is that right? Yeah,
it was only,
or did it get it?
No, there's only the only bit, we've got a snippet on the Twickenham sessions on the 3rd of January 69.
Did not know the chords.
Oh,
what's that one? He's got a great one, Picasso.
Because actually it's a fast one too, isn't it?
It's too fast for me.
Looked at it upside down the octave.
The other way I couldn't find the lady nowhere to be. It looked like a wooden chair.
baby.
Old baby.
Like a wooden chair, then what's the next bit? I looked at him, so they make it twice longer, as long, yeah. Then do the old baby. Oh, thanks, well.
Oh, upside down, baby. Then
the other way. I got the to me, it looked like a wooden chair.
You know, Dylan. There was paint everywhere.
You know.
Old baby.
Should do it, though, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't think it was even in the Get Back movie, but you can. Obviously, they are around. The lyrics, I bought a Picasso, I bought a Picasso, hung it on its side. Then the other way I couldn't find the lady nowhere, looking to me like a wooden chair, old baby.
I think that's about as far, about as much as we've got on here as well, it's lyrics-wise.
Yeah.
What I'll say is that he is giving it a great go, and there's a song in there somewhere, but he's still finding it. But that's not stopping him trying. Yeah, it's a demo.
That's
what I'll say about that one. there's a third one as well, which is a much more down tempo. Have you seen the tulips grow? Is pretty much all I can hear from that lyrics wise, and I couldn't find anything on that front. So anything at all?
The only other song where he did a song again. There's a clip of this on Get Back. Taking a trip to Carolina, but lyrics, I don't know if that'd fit in.
Well, you know,
I've got taking a trip to Carolina. In the same.
In his mind.
Taking a trip on an ocean liner. I gotta get to Carolina. Taking a trip on an ocean liner. I gotta get to Carolina. Oh, baby. I've got it on the little tapes, but I've been to LA and New York too, so they're not very nice. You know, the words mean they're not very good. Uh-huh. Carolina's, oh baby.
Just get me back then.
The lyrics to Taking a Trip to Carolina are taking a trip on an ocean liner, I gotta get to Carolina. Taking a trip on an ocean liner, I gotta get to Carolina. Do 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 do, oh baby.
Well, he liked an oh baby.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
So,
but yeah, I don't know. I don't think that's it.
No.
But yeah, I'd love. I mean, that one is. There's probably more I'd say to that one than there is for I Bought a Picasso.
It could have. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what it might have evolved into.
Only one person knows.
Yes. Well, yeah. Or knew.
Yeah, true. Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned there's lots of recordings of Ringo sort of messing around in stupid voices, and
they are really, for me, you know, all of the kind of the revelations and the other recordings in there, you know, the band together, and all of it for me personally is trumped by Ringo's incredible capacity for, well, comedy. It's pure comedy, and I was on a run last night, and I was thinking. I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about Ringo, and I was thinking, do you remember Vine, the format?
Yes.
It was like, it's like proto TikTok. So you recorded really short videos, and if Vine was around in 1966, Ringo would have been the world's biggest star of Vine, because he did 10 to 15 second bits, all of his own making, where he did a cast of voices, and it's just hilarious. Just listen through it. It's just so funny. His imagination, you know, whether he was inspired by any of the things that they brought along with them on the trip, you know, any of the luggage, shall we say, whether that played a part in his creative process, who can say? But it's brilliant. I mean, I sent you some of the transcripts, I think, didn't I?
Yes.
Some of the things he comes out with.
Am I allowed to read them out, or do you want to read them out? Or?
Yeah, no, you go on, Chris. You can.
I've
got them handy.
But yeah, he used to do very similar things with John Lennon in Kenwood. There's audio of them just sort of messing around, doing any old random stuff, often playing with the Mellotron and singing along to that, but it's that kind of thing. But yeah, where's one? He says, shouts at ear-splitting volume, breakfast is the best meal of the day! And these are all done in Manila, but in a funny voice, he's written, sometimes I wonder if it's all worth it, hoeing the garden, doing the weeds, making the garden look pretty. But then people say, Stan, that's a lovely garden you've got there, Stan, and it makes me happy. It makes me happy to think that people are looking over the fence, looking over my fence. They've got no right to look over my fence. Who do they think they are? I built that fence myself. My blood and sweat went into it.
So it's brilliant. He's just so good.
How much of there is there of all that?
Oh, hours would be an exaggeration, but there's lots of it. And there's plenty in Japan as well. Those are the bits from Manila that I pulled out. In Manila, you really get the sense that he is spending almost all the time in his room and just sort of doing these bits. That was where his attention was, you know.
Well, both in Japan and Manila, they had to, didn't they? They it's not like they could go anywhere. They had to stay in there.
No. Yeah, definitely. And then also sort of in Japan, it's more interspersed with sort of outside world. And then in Manila, it's just kind of, it's sort of solo Ringo. And he talks about getting there as well and mentioning not having a great time right from the off. So, I mean, I guess they sort of got off on the wrong foot right from the very start there in Manila. He mentions they went straight to a boat party, I think, in Manila. Well, he says, you know, we went straight to a boat and then we got out of there and went to the hotel because the boat was too noisy, which is how he frames it. But they were probably, you know, absolutely exhausted and didn't fancy going straight to a party for somebody's party.
Yeah, well, 3rd of July, they went from Japan to the Philippines, and it was a nightmare from the start. George said later, you know, it was just negative as soon as we got there. Described the people as tough gorillas, and they were really menacing. And that basically the usual protocol of swiftly going from the airport to the venue was completely destroyed. They were escorted to the Philippine Navy headquarters for a press conference, and then taken to a yacht owned by Don Manolo Elizakal. And George said they were isolated from their usual team, and there was a gun-toting cops on the yacht. It was just horrendous. This was before it had even come out about them, which they didn't snub Imelda Marcos. So already there was a negative vibe. So no wonder Ringo was just locking himself away, enjoying his luggage and recording all this sort of stuff.
Definitely. And he says, you know, he says we went from the boat to the hotel, but the hotel's pretty crappy too. Yeah. So I think he's underplaying what was probably incredibly, because they did sort of almost get kidnapped, didn't they, from the airport to the boat. So it can't have been very fun, but he plays that down. But yeah, you sort of hear him in Manila, and he's recording from the TV as well, as far as I can tell, a little bit. So he's obviously just kind of stuck in his room very much at that point, and you don't hear much from everybody else at that point till they get to India, really.
The Manoshire, which always appeals to me, you mentioned their breakfast order in Manila.
Yeah, two teas, two toasts, and one boiled egg or something like that.
And two cornflakes.
Two cornflakes, yeah. They talk about food a fair bit as well, actually. You get some great bits in Japan where they're just sort of looking in awe at the spread in front of them and talking. But that's in a very kind of different tone to the Manila breakfast order, which is kind of shouted.
What else is on here? You mentioned Maharishi.
Yeah, we've got, there's a quite an extended recording, pretty much just of the Maharishi giving, I don't know what you would call it, a lecture, I suppose, a talk, a kind of a seminar. And I think when we spoke, I had sort of incorrectly, just because of, you know, I had 66 in my head. I thought they presumably must have done it all at the same time. But of course, that's almost certainly not the case, is it? Because he didn't come over till 67.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering when it could be. It depends what's on there, because it could be from three different sources. This is just going through the description in the press release. Basically, on the evening of Thursday, the 24th of August, 67, at the Hilton Hotel on Park Lane, they went to attend the Maharishi lecture, but everybody except Ringo, because Ringo, he'd just become a father 5 days earlier. However, it is possible that Ringo could have lent the tape recorder and they could have recorded it for him, because there's a later example of that in 69, the Beatles' penultimate business meeting. Ringo was in hospital, so they recorded that for him. So there's a cassette available for that. So it might be that. Or it could be the 25th of August when they went to Bangor. So he might have taken his trusty tape recorder with him there. Originally, they were going to be there for 10 days, but, you know, 2 days later, Brian Epstein died. Or third, it might be from February 68 when they were in Rishikesh. But I don't know.
I'm not well versed enough to date it from the content of what he's saying. He's talking to a crowd and he's he's a really good speaker, and he's you know, he's making some jokes, but I can't, there's nothing else in there that can kind of date it for me.
The only way it could be dated, I guess, would be, does it sound like it was recording inside or outside?
Yeah, I would say inside. Yeah, I think it would be inside. Was the banger weekend, was that outdoors?
No, that was indoors. Yeah, both the first two in 67 were indoors. In Rishikesh, he did have a hall, so it would have been very echoey, or he would have been outside. So I would say from your description, maybe the 67 ones, but who knows?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, it's fascinating in and of itself. And it's just, I think that I, because of the sort of the Ringo and the Beatles content, I haven't listened through the whole of the kind of Maharishi portion of the tape. That backs onto the Ringo at the piano sessions, which might help to date those, actually. Thinking about that.
Well, if he's on a piano, he wouldn't have a piano in Rishikesh.
No. So I guess that could well place it to Bangor or otherwise. There's a cut between the sections. He's, you know, pit stop and then he comes back. But I guess you would naturally be recording around the same time, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So, yeah. There's some detective work needed on that, perhaps.
Yeah. You said there's recordings from the Budokan concerts.
Yeah, there is. And I think that they recorded them and got them out quite quickly, didn't they, for TV? So initially I was wondering, did he bring his cassette recorder on stage? But I think that I'm pretty confident now that it's, which is potentially even more interesting, is that it's them listening back. So they're somewhere in, pretty well, the hotel, or certainly listening back to the concerts. And I'm guessing that that'll be probably just after or before when Paul or John says to Brian, "How did we do?" sort of thing. So they've obviously got that recording to listen to.
Yes. That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I think it went out on TV,
yes,
potentially while they were still there.
Yes.
I don't know if it was possible to cut it that quickly, but they've got a copy of it, that's for sure. And they're laughing as well. They're laughing as somebody introduces a song in a funny way. But they're laughing along. They're enjoying it. You know, they're quite proud of what they can hear, at least, which is nice.
Yeah. And how did this tape end up with you, all these tapes?
Well, there's only so much I can say, really, of course, with, you know, classic client confidentiality rules, which, you know, which are there for a reason. But, you know, the vendor bought a sort of a job lot of Beatles bits and bobs years ago from somebody. And these were simply part of it.
No.
They were buying it for the, you know, the sort of the LPs and the rest of it.
Wow.
And then these cassettes were just there, and they set them aside and, you know, to come back to at some point. And it wasn't for a little while until they listened through them and realized what was there. And then they got in touch with us.
Yes.
But yeah, it's one of those stories that's incredible. And
it seems to be happening so much lately. We've had, like, Paul's Hofner bass sort of re-emerged. Last year we had the Stow tape, which had been sat on for all those years. There's still a lot out there that we don't know about.
Which is incredible, really, isn't it? And I think whenever these things come to light, you can't believe. I mean, Paul's bass is a really incredible one, isn't it? I remember, did they launch an appeal, I think, to get that back? And I remember thinking at the time, you will never, ever see that again. There you go. I mean, that's a heartwarmer, that one. But yeah, I mean, and in the same auction, we've got the film that's never been seen before as well, of them on Ready, Steady, Go and Around the Beatles.
Yes.
Behind the scenes, as it were.
In colour as well.
In colour, yeah. God, that is really, we've seen and sold quite a lot of film footage. In fact, funny enough, we had some footage from them in Bangor with the Maharishi that we sold a few years ago. And I'm always hesitant to kind of, this is the best we've ever had, but it's definitely up there. The quality and the content is just amazing. It just kind of puts a huge smile on your face to see it, because it's just so, it's so clear and it's so candid, and they're really on form and having a good time and smoking cigarettes constantly all the way through. You know, every second they got, somebody's having a fag.
From your description, it really makes me laugh. You obviously, you've seen Get Back, I guess, about all the chaos going on around them. You know, people panicking, are we going to get this thing on time? And they're just sitting there joking and laughing. And, you know, you think what went on in Manila, you know, death threats, and Japan as well. And there they are just messing around, doing stupid tape recordings and painting. We've got the paint. This was one of the recordings on here was either during or around the time they were doing the images of a woman painting.
Yeah, it's funny enough, the original came up for auction.
Yes.
Not so long ago. And funnily enough, as a late addition to the auction that we've got on the 26th, just sort of serendipitous, actually, a chap who organised an exhibition, The Art of the Beatles, in the 80s, he wanted that painting for the exhibition, and the owner wasn't willing to send it over to Liverpool for the exhibition, which is fair enough. Instead, he arranged for the painting to be photographed in high quality.
Mike Evans. And, yes. Yeah.
This was the Walker Art Gallery, made September 1984. So you'll see that in there somewhere, I'm sure, and it'll probably make mention. But what we've got is they took a photo of the painting and sent the negative over to Liverpool. And they had that blown up to a sort of professional standard and exhibited. So it's, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's the best copy of the painting you're ever going to see.
Wow.
Anyway, the chap who organised that all those years ago in 83-84 has held on to it since then and has just brought it to auction now. So we're selling that, which doesn't quite hold the same value as the original, which I think sold for £1 million
plus. 1.7 million.
£1.7 million. We're asking £1,000 plus for this copy, which, you know what, when you see it, it's pretty good. Yeah. But it must have been amazing to sit there and watch them doing that and then to sign it as well.
I love the circle. For years, I didn't know why is there a white circle in the middle? And that's when they had the lamp.
Yeah, so they could do it. I know. Yeah. I read that too. That's brilliant.
I think when you mentioned around the Beatles, of the landlady of a pub I used to go to, she was actually there. And I'd been collecting Beatles videos for years. And she said, yeah, I was right in the front row. And I remember I leant out and grabbed Paul McCartney's leg. And I said,
you're joking.
I said, I know who you, I know that. I know that scene. Yeah. So I took the video into the pub.
I've seen that too.
And you can see her. Yeah, Marion Thompson, her name is. If you're listening, Mark Lewison.
we noticed that scene as we were watching the video. You've got an amazing aerial view of that exact moment happening.
Yes, I'm going to send her that, yeah.
that's brilliant. It's funny how these things tie together. We also have got camera scripts from Top of the Pops that's fully signed. And we've also got a very nice fully signed copy of Please Please Me, which is a big seller, obviously, these days, always has been. But the signatures on that signed Please Please Me were obtained during the filming for Around the Beatles. So in the same auction, we've got footage of the band backstage around the Beatles and a signed LP from that filming session, which is amazing.
I did notice you've got a few Mersey Beats, which I've got my eye on. I noticed the one.
Beatles top poll.
Yeah, that's going for a lot more than the others.
Yeah. Yeah, those are fantastic. All from a single owner who, you know, he remembers going to the newsagents and asking for them. I think he went to the newsagents. The collection starts with number two and he just missed out on number one. He went to the newsagents and asked if they had last week's and they didn't have it. So he got number two instead. But there's an amazing run of them. They are fantastic to leaf through. They really are. You've got Brian Epstein's musical recommendations column, you know.
Yes.
And some great early photos. The sort of 61 photos of the band there, which for me, stylistically, I think potentially the coolest era, the leather jacket era, that picture of the Beatles top pole with them and Pete there looking just so cool and also so young as well.
Yeah. So with regards to the tapes, what would be the best scenario for us, the general public? Who would be the person to buy these?
Well, I mean, It's a tricky one to sort of speak on as the auctioneer. You know, for me, you know, the best scenario for us is delivering the result for the person who's selling them. And that means, you know, who will pay the most money for them. You know, speaking from a personal capacity, you always hope that having enjoyed these, I've been, you know, and I realize just how lucky I am to have the chance to listen to these. It's a thing that people would, you know, would really, of course, love to do. I would love that they would be released in some capacity, but that is of course well beyond my powers. But it's, you know, I would love that they found a way to be released some way in an abridged format or in full. Really, I'm sure there's there's enough there for people to enjoy the whole way through, really.
Yeah, I think the Stowe tapes were a good example, weren't they? Just give them to the British Library. It takes a big-hearted person to do that. So if there's any rich, big-hearted people listening, you know what to do.
We can live in hope. We can live in hope.
Tell me about some of the previous auctions. What were some of the most interesting Beatles items you've done in the past?
I think the thing that sort of really, it was actually before my time with the business, but what really sort of launched us as a, well, there's a few things that really launched us as a destination for Beatles, memorabilia and records. We sold the Hello Little Girl acetate in 2016. Les McGuire had that in his attic, I think it was, Jerry and the Pacemakers, keyboard player. And I think that the pre-auction estimate was sort of £10,000 plus, and that sold for £77,500.
Wow.
Which is incredible. So that really sort of kicked things off, and we've had some incredible stuff since. You know, we've sold cars. You know, we had George's Merc, and we've sold Beatles houses. We sold John's mum's house, and we sold George's childhood home in Speke as well, which sold well. We had an incredible collection a few years ago of photographs of the Beatles in America by the photographer Mike Mitchell, who was this young guy, and he didn't have a flash, I think it was the story, and he took these just incredible photographs of the Beatles using natural light, you know, a young kid, and I think that was £200,000 plus for the Mike Mitchell archive. Which was worth all the money, absolutely. Yeah, and then of course, you know, all of the signatures you can shake a stick at, and
I think,
and more, of course.
I think these cassettes are just, oh, if I were a rich man, because you've sort of estimated between 10 and 20,000 for these, but I'm guessing from what you've just said, chances are there's going to be much more than that.
Yeah, it's you know, putting a price tag on something completely unique is difficult to do, but that felt like a kind of a ballpark figure, and it actually increased from the original estimate that we had in mind. Once we sort of sat down and listened through them, then that went up, which is the same thing that happened with the unseen film of the Ready Steady going around the Beatles. Once we sat down and watched that in full, we thought this is worth a bit more than we'd originally thought. So yeah, £10,000 to £20,000. It's I think that we should beat that estimate. You never know what'll happen on the day.
So, for anybody who's rich enough, where do we go for the auction?
So we are Amiga Auctions, and if you put us into Google, you should find us pretty easily. And it's on the 26th of March up here. So we hold, you know, we still hold auctions in person, as it were. So you're welcome to come and visit us. We're in Newton the Willows, about halfway between Manchester and Liverpool. So it's midday, kicks off at midday on the 26th of March. Or you can sort of do what most people do these days and just have a look online and bid online. You know, probably most of our clients these days do it all from the computer and get their packages through the door a few days later.
Yeah. Well, good luck, and thank you for sharing what you can share. I really appreciate it. Dan Muscatelli-Hampson, thank you so much.
Thanks, Chris. Hey!